Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we are now fully into the offseason. This is it.
Yeah, we got the team pretty much as it is, and now it's the beginning of the dog days. I actually sort of like this time because I can really like take time on videos and stuff. But I remember before I was creating content, it would be like Tom Hanks in Castaway, just scratching tallies on a rock, like for every day that goes by, you know.
Yeah, it's this is the time of year where we get to talk about we dive deep into who should be the 14th or the 13th man on the roster,
right? And get very, very upset if it's not the guy that we want.
there's always fights on Twitter for some random reason because we have nowhere else to let out our competitive nature on this stuff. So yeah, this is
damn it, Bob! They signed Troy Daniels too early.
Exactly. But today's show, as I said yesterday, we had so many questions come in over last weekend that I had to stretch this out into three different mailbag pods. We didn't do a mailbag pod with you on Monday, so
no,
it winds up working out. I'm just going to dive right in. We have about six questions here, and you know, mailbag questions take a little bit longer when it's both Pete and I giving our responses to it. So let's just dive right in. QBreezy12 writes, "Hey Anthony, I hope you and your liver are having a good time in Vegas." You know, I can't complain, actually. I had fun, and then I didn't have too much fun. That's great. I have two questions. Do you think analytics relevancy varies from sport to sport? I tend to think baseball is where it's most useful, football being kind of inconsistent, and basketball being somewhere in the middle. Also, did the Lakers have to make it that obvious they're going all in on Giannis in 2021? Let's start with the Giannis thing. The analytics one is a fascinating topic that we can just kind of we can spend a little bit more time on. But the Giannis thing to me is weird. I'm not comfortable with 2020. Like right now, we're 2 years away from this guy, and we're talking about this. Like if I was a Milwaukee fan, I'd be pretty annoyed about how everybody's fawning over this. And look, like the Lakers. Yes, they have contracts ending at that summer, but nowadays most contracts don't go beyond 3 or 4 years anyway. So almost none of them. You know, it's really rare actually.
Especially with the superstars, they're going to get player options in their contracts. So it's really like Kawhi just signed a 2+1. That 2021, Kawhi's going to be a free agent that year.
Right. Right.
Exactly. So and that's part of the reason why those guys have so much power now.
Yeah. So I don't think it's necessarily a coincidence. I don't think it's necessarily fully a coincidence that they have these deals ending at that time or whatever. But I also don't think it's the Lakers being super duper obvious in this respect. It's kind of the thing that it's the smart thing to have happen anyway. And it's the way things are done nowadays in the NBA. So you combine those two things, and that's where the Lakers stand. How do you feel about Giannis in 2021?
So, I mean, Giannis, it makes me wonder if that's part of the rationale behind the Jason Kidd hiring. We didn't really put those together because we were hoping that we would get a max guy this summer. But he's a guy that Giannis, you know, really sung his praises about it, you know, and gave him a lot of credit for his development. Now, Bucks fans will argue
rightfully.
Right, you know, that's not accurate, but if Giannis feels that way, that could be important. Mm-hmm. The 2021 free agent class is actually really good. Even if it's not Giannis, there are other good players on the market that are worth pursuing. Now, does Anthony Davis plus Bradley Beal win you a title? Probably not, and you probably have to hit one of these upcoming draft picks in the next 2 years. DeMarcus Cousins maybe gets healthy, although the Lakers won't have his bird rights. Something else has to – so let me read off some of the names. Mm-hmm. Aside from – you got Giannis and Kawhi, who are the two superstars at that point. LeBron could opt out of his contract at that time. And the Lakers would not be able to keep LeBron and sign Giannis unless LeBron were to opt out and, say, sign for the MLE because he wants to win one more title, which is a possibility, right? Yeah. But at LeBron's market rate, he would not be able to be on the team. But so, yeah, you got LeBron, Kawhi, Blake Griffin, who would be 32 years old. Paul George will be 31. Mike Conley at 33. DeRozan at 32. Rudy Gobert will be 29. Bradley Beal at 28. You know, Steven Adams, Andre Drummond, like good players, right? These aren't guys that you're necessarily like, oh my God, this guy's a free agent. But that's pretty good depth for a free agent class. So even if the Lakers don't get Giannis, they will have other options. Although I will argue that the two guys potentially on the market are Giannis and Kawhi that could be like, oh, hey, we've got two superstars on this team rather than just all stars.
Right. There's also the guys who are going to, you know, take leaps and bounds forward over that time that like we don't consider superstars right now. But by the time we get to 2021, we'll be looking at them like, holy crap, look at that value. So, yeah, I don't know. I just personally, I think this team and this season is so fascinating that we'll get to that summer when we get to that summer.
Right. Yeah. That's actually one of the things I'm really excited about is not talking about free agency in 2 years as often as we have over the last several years, because that's really what we had to look for. We actually can like really get into the back. God, I can't wait to like break down a playoff series, you know, and like scout an opponent to see, you know, how do you beat this team in seven games? So, yeah, I mean, Giannis is the obvious guy. If you get a chance at a guy like Giannis or a guy like Kawhi, you go for it. I'm okay with that. Do you want to address the analytics?
Yes, let's do that. Okay. So the analytics thing here is fascinating between sports. I agree with the assessment that baseball is the end of the spectrum one way. Football is the opposite end of that spectrum over there. I don't know jack crap about hockey, so I'm not even going to try to mention that. And basketball, if we were to say if it's closer to one end of the spectrum, I would probably say basketball is much closer to baseball than it is to football.
Okay.
I think so. My reasoning for why it's tougher, it's easier to isolate metrics in baseball because those players are a lot more independent of each other, right? Somebody playing center field really well might affect a pitcher's metrics, but like somebody's ability at the plate is kind of it's much more individualized versus, you know, basketball where you have spacing and all these things. And then football is even further in that direction with basketball. Football is also kind of in like a lot of Neanderthals in football, like in management in football.
I was going to say that a lot more diplomatically, but yes, analytics have not permeated football quite in the same way that for perhaps those reasons.
I remember Bill Polian losing his effing mind because some team acquired Brock Osweiler and a couple draft picks. And Bill Polian sitting there losing his mind, like, you just screwed up your cap. You're so screwed moving forward. You're done to do all these things. And like the younger people in the room were like, no, actually, this is a smart move. They got like 2 second rounders out of just accepting a bad contract when they're going to be bad anyway. And he was just losing his marbles over this, just going insane. And I think there's a lot more Bill Polians throughout the organizations in football than there are in baseball than in basketball. How do you feel about the spectrum and why some of these things exist?
Yeah, I think that baseball is probably the easiest of the sports to encapsulate true value via analytics. Like, so there's analytics for anything and everything. It's just a matter of how
it's
complex.
Just information.
Right, it's information. And so in baseball, the nature of it is you're starting and stopping after every play, right from one batter to another, and the attack is coming from the same place. Now you can steal a base here and there, even though that's becoming less and less frequent in baseball. But the attack is always coming from the same place, whereas in basketball, and heck, that's even true in football, that it's coming from the same place. You're starting and stopping and snapping. Now you can run the ball, throw the ball, run all sorts of routes. There's more spatial, and that's the main difference between football and basketball versus baseball, is it's more of a spatial game in that, like, it's so hard to hit a baseball in the first place. Like, you've got, you know, your Jock Petersons who's going to pull everything, right? Mm-hmm. And there are shifts that you can implement, but there's a lot more data based on that. And like Jock Peterson, everyone's like, beat the shift, bunt the other way. It's not really, it's no way.
You don't want a home run. You don't want to hit a home run hitter wasting at bats on bunting the opposite direction.
Right. So it's a lot more predictable where the attack of the offense is coming from. Baseball is also a sport where the defense dictates a lot more than it does in other sports, where you've got the pitcher is the person who who initiates the beginning of the play, and whether they're if they're throwing an outside fastball, you know, that's going to be different than a changeup on the inside in terms of where that ball might get hit. So with basketball, so for one, like you said, it's all information. I find myself in an interesting place because I've always been a real pro analytics guy, because it's like, hey, this is more information than, you know, like, it's good to have extra information. I do have a serious complaint about people who are heavy into analytics in many instances being
the lack of context.
Right. And being very blind to the fact that there are other versions of wisdom that are very important.
Yeah.
That these numbers and the application of them are not the only thing that matters, right? That the people element matter. And just there's a condescension to it that I've never been comfortable with, even as somebody who really embraces it. Like, you're not the only people who are smart. And like former players who played the game, they have wisdom to offer that you and I could never touch, right? They've touched it and tasted it and felt it. And like, what does it feel like to try to run through a screen or to be hit by that, to be hit by a screen? And what does it feel like to defend Kobe Bryant, right? All those things.
Yeah.
I think there's wisdom in that, applicable wisdom, not just like, oh, that's a cool story, but like, this stuff matters in terms of how you're able to construct a winning franchise. And the best franchises are going to be able to marry those analytics, going to be able to push them forward into the more complex areas where I think basketball really needs to go, because there's so much movement and transition from offense to defense, marrying those components with the human element and getting people who can talk to the coaches and talk to the players and get the players to believe that this is the right way versus like, this is how you can do it a little bit better than how you were raised. And eventually it'll permeate down to the youth, you know, areas of the game, and players will be raised that way, and there will be less of that dissonance that's currently there.
Yep, I completely agree with everything, especially the lack of context that goes into analytics. I just view it as information. If I see a stat and I can actually identify and understand how that stat was put together, then great, awesome. I enjoy that stat. That's great information. But it's when, you know, you get like, usage to me is something that I don't think is factored into the analytical approach to analysis nearly often enough, where you get people who say, oh, but I don't know, who's a low usage? Like, Chris Middleton is actually more valuable than Kobe Bryant was, right? Because his efficiency numbers are through the roof compared to Kobe. And it's like, and to be fair, that's a thoroughly exaggerated example here that I've never heard, but you hear permutations of that, iterations of that, where people are trying to go out here and tell me that low usage guys hold the same value as the guys who are expected to carry their offense, and their efficiency suffers as a result of that. Like, that's
absolutely
that's a major issue that you know, those who utilize analytics to the nth degree need to figure out a way to build that bridge, to bridge the gap in those two very important aspects of analyzing basketball.
100%.
All right, let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, we have a bit of a lengthy question here that I'm going to paraphrase down. So take a quick second here, step away. When we come back, we're going to talk about how Kawhi Leonard approached his free agency and whether he did himself favors in either direction. All right, so the question here is from Ray is on it, and he is a, or they are a, Ray is, well, I guess there's the Star Wars way who is a girl too. But anyway, they are asking, as a fourth year econ PhD student who is really into game theory, how, I'm paraphrasing again, how Kawhi Leonard handled everything and whether he put himself in the best situation he possibly could have. So just on a general level, Pete, do you think Kawhi Leonard put himself in the best situation by way of the process he utilized during his own free agency?
It depends on what Kawhi valued. Now, from a game theory standpoint, right, if you're thinking that Kawhi set up a rival, right, to try to hurt the Lakers in the process of doing this, and I think that it's, you know, perhaps a clever and devious way to go about it. I think the Lakers recovered fairly well in a way that, you know, that they weren't particularly damaged by having to wait for him.
It seems like the Lakers were prepared for that game theory too, by the way.
Right.
Like, I mean, they knew he was capable of it.
the Lakers knew they were in the mix, and I still think that they were in the mix. And that was always the problem that I had. It wasn't a matter of who he ended up signing with. It was just this idea that the Lakers wouldn't have cap space for him, that the Lakers weren't in the mix. And even Woj said on his pod afterward was like, hey, you know, like, if they don't pull off that Paul George trade, then he's probably a Laker. Mm-hmm. Now, all that said, it's very obvious that Kawhi wanted to be a Clipper and that he was going down, okay, no KD, all right, how about Jimmy Butler? How about Kyrie? Mm-hmm. Eventually got far enough down the list to a Paul George. So you could argue that he was going to make it work one way or another. In terms of putting himself in the best position now, he basically maybe didn't ask this directly, but the result was that the Clippers kind of mortgaged their future. Like, if Kawhi plays there for 2 years and Paul George, like, they're both free agents in that summer of 2021. If one or both of them walk, the Clippers are in bad shape.
Yeah.
Now, for an organization like that, that's never had much success at all, even if you just get 2 years out of him, it's the same thing as Toronto, right?
Right.
Like, is Toronto regretting that Kawhi Leonard trade?
No.
Hell no, right? No,
not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. So it's worth it to them. But yeah, I think Kawhi, if what's important is important to him, is for him to be the man and to be that giant killer, not want to form a super team, I think he probably did the best for himself in terms of where he could have gone. He lost a lot of money on this, both in terms of investments, passing up a supermax with San Antonio, going all the way back to their
taxes.
Right. All of that stuff. I think him and his team played the Lakers, and Masai Ujiri has kind of made some comments that allude to not being thrilled with how his team handled it from the Toronto perspective too. But I don't think it was some like enormous, like, wow, you slayed your enemy, like, you knew you were going to sign with them, so you're trying to hurt them. I don't think he really did that much damage at the end of the day.
I also think so. One criticism of Danny Ainge from his peers, from other executives around the league, has been Danny Ainge wants every single trade he makes to be some version of that Kevin Garnett-Paul Pierce trade with Brooklyn, right? He wants to absolutely ravage your assets every single time he steps to the negotiating table. And as a result, he has made quite a few enemies throughout the league who do not want to deal with him, right? Mm-hmm. And while I think Kawhi Leonard played this about as well as he could, if this was his you know, end game intention, I do think there's an outcome here that some teams around the league, when he's a free agent again in 2021, they aren't going to be as willing to work with him as they were this time around.
That's a good point. And maybe he just resigns with the Clippers, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
So if that's the case, then everything turns out really well. But I do think that he and his camp annoyed enough people throughout the league and annoyed enough reporters too, by the way. Like, It got to the point here where Chris Carter was the most consistent avenue of information into what Kawhi Leonard's camp was thinking, and even he was wrong on a few things, right?
Right.
And you know, just from this is just me being a PR head, you don't want to piss off the media the way that he seems to have in this last. Woj isn't
do
the same.
Do you think he really did that though? Like,
I think
so. Do you think he did that, Anthony? Do you think he really pissed off
me? I think to a certain extent. It's not. And look, I think we have left the days of Woj going full, you know, ether on every single person who dares to not give him a scoop. I think those days are gone. I think ESPN, quite frankly, kind of sort of tempered that. We saw it some with the Lakers here and Pelinka and his analysis of the Lakers. But I don't know if you remember when, and the article has since been deleted from the internet, but Woj wrote an article about LeBron referencing Dirk Nowitzki because LeBron didn't give him the scoop on the Miami move. That was very poorly, well, written, one, and then it was in hugely poor taste. I don't think we're there anymore. But I do think fewer, just same thing with executives around the league. I think there are going to be fewer people interested in playing that game next time around. And maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe he just stays in LA with the Clippers for the rest of his career. And if that's the case, then really, that's cool. I think it's a really cool outcome to the story. But man, I just think there's value in not annoying just about everybody throughout the league, because there were players who were waiting on this outcome too, by the way. There were peers who were waiting on this stuff too, and it's his decision to make, and he put himself in a situation where he could have the league waiting on his decision. But there's still an outcome or a result of that you can't really control, that I think he kind of played it. He overplayed that hand a little bit.
I don't think he cares.
No, I really don't either. I don't think so either. But him not caring doesn't mean that thing doesn't exist.
Sure. And what will the repercussions? Honestly, I feel like if he did this with a different team at the center of it, I would agree with you more on this in terms of like there being repercussions. People love to see the Lakers on the butt end of a joke. You know what I mean? So the fact that it's the Lakers, it's more of a ha ha, you know, screw those guys type of thing to more people. So I think fewer people are sour about it as a result of that.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. The coverage of Kawhi Leonard moving forward is going to be fascinating, because he pissed off one of the league's darling, right? The San Antonio Spurs, and he didn't exactly end things very well there. He annoyed Masai Ujiri and or his camp did. Toronto is another, I wouldn't call him necessarily a darling in the same way that Spurs are, right? But people were happy to see Toronto succeed, and there's a huge market there in Canada who was interested in the NBA in ways that they hadn't been previously. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, the next thing, something, I wouldn't say shady is the right word for it, but for lack of a better term, something like that goes down, how Kawhi is handled in that respect. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Let's take... You know what? We're going to take a quick second here. We're going to step away, and we'll have a longer third segment to get to the remaining three questions that we have here. All right, so Scott from Your Belinda writes, Fred, thanks for the top-notch coverage you and Pete continue to provide. You're welcome. Pete's great. Here are my starters. Alex Caruso, Danny Green, LeBron, AD, and JaVale. I think Caruso has the best defense of the three point guards, and I like McGee starting games ahead of Boogie. I like Rondo, Boogie, and Kuzma to lead the second unit. Where are you on this? Also, the wife, Kathy, wants to know if you think Lakers versus Clips on Christmas, and do you believe in the Clippers curse? Thanks again for all you do. You're welcome. All right, so we talked about rotations. We had a rotation-heavy show last episode. One of the, I guess, retorts to the analysis that we offered there was that Anthony Davis is not as interested in playing the five as maybe we led it to believe. And I'll let you build on this point too. That's just where he's played the majority of his minutes over the last few years. Like, go ahead.
So according to Basketball Reference, which is not always accurate on this particular thing, but this was definitely true last year. You know, the last season where Anthony Davis played more power forward than he played center? 2014-15, when Monty Williams was his coach. Mm-hmm. Last year, who started alongside Anthony Davis? Do you remember?
Was it Randall? No.
No, he came off the bench. It was Mrotić.
Yeah.
You think Mrotić was playing the five?
Yeah.
According to Basketball Reference.
No, probably not.
Anthony Davis played 96% of his minutes at center last year.
Yeah.
And it was 51% before, and 64% the year before, and 54% the year before. You have to go back to 2015 for it to have been a year where he played more power forward than center. Now, he said on the Jimmy Kimmel show like 2 or 3 years ago that, you know, I like being a power forward. People always assume that you're going to be a center. Now, the Lakers have Boogie and they have JaVale, and those are one position guys. So you're not going to get as many, you know, minutes out of AD when you've got those type of guys if you want to play them together. Mm-hmm. But I do think that Anthony Davis, his if he now, and his trade request had nothing to do with Like, I hate playing center, right? It's
It'd be funny if it was.
Right.
These bastards.
He's a guy that's played a lot of center and has played it very well. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So I don't think it's as big of a deal. Like, maybe he doesn't want to start at center, but he can and should and has played plenty of center the last four seasons.
How much of, like, the everybody – because Tim Duncan was the same way. Kevin Garnett was kind of sort of the same way as well.
Yes. Like, was Matt Bonner really the Spurs center?
Right, right.
Like, so, redheaded, skinny, like, 6'10 guy that only shot –
rocking New Balance and cargo shorts on an NBA court.
Who cares what you call it, right?
But how much of, like, everybody's desire to play power forward comes from how cool that position sounds compared to all the other positions on the court? Like, power forward's a badass position when you just, I'm a power forward.
Like, sure.
No, I obviously I'm being facetious. Here's my thing. AD just gave the Lakers $4 million back so that the Lakers could improve their roster, right? Now, some are going to say, well, that was a result of the clutch thing. It was a LeBron and whatever thing, and he's going to make that money back, whatever. But it was still a decision that he made to give money back to the Lakers to either be able to sign Kawhi Leonard or, and even after they, like, they had time, by the way, to just give him that money anyway after Kawhi Leonard was signed. And so
I believe that the trade had to be, in order for the trade to be executed under its current construction, he actually had to waive that trade kicker for it to be a legal deal.
Really?
That's what Eric Pincus has been saying. Huh. So maybe I misunderstood Eric, or that's the case.
Huh.
Either way.
But it was still a decision that he made to you know, in yes. this case, like yes. Rich Paul went out there and said that he did that to make the Lakers better, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis makes every team that he's on better by playing center versus by playing power forward. It's just a more natural fit. He spaces the floor better as a center. It makes the team a lot more mobile. He is a very a good creator out of the center position, which is hugely valuable in the modern NBA. Like, there, when you play him at center, you can now play him alongside a power forward who further spaces the floor compared to alongside a JaVale McGee who does that to a lesser extent. Like, there's just – if he's this open to helping the Lakers in the way that he already has, why would he now put a hard line in the sand and say, that is not where I'm going to go, meatloaf style, right?
That is
I will not do that.
That's a fair point. I do – the pessimistic side of me has a bit of a concern that if that's true, to whatever degree it's still true regarding Anthony Davis, mm-hmm. our two best players don't love playing their best positions.
Yeah.
Because LeBron's a four mm-hmm. at his best, and AD is a five at his best. If they want to play more three and four, like, they're still great. They're just not as great as they are when they're at the four and five. So is that something that, like, and, you know, does Kuzma have to start? There's a lot of, like, individual – I don't want to say agenda. That's so pejorative. I just can't think of a better word. But, yeah. like, they're, in order for this team to really max out what they can be, that might mean Anthony Davis playing a lot of center. That might mean LeBron playing a lot of four. That might mean Kuzma coming off of the bench. All of those things, it could be a combination of those, or it could be all of them. But will guys be willing to do that? There are parts of me that, you know, that have some concerns
yeah.
when you've got – you're really your main guys not – doing what may necessarily be best for the team.
Well, so last year we saw – so last year the thinking heading into the season was, well, LeBron will play the five, and he'll be the best stretch five that there has ever been, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, similar fart noise to LeBron's own analysis of the situation. But this is him wanting to play the four. Like, LeBron has been a better four than a three than he, like, over the last, I don't know, decade, right? Like, that's just been the case. And even there in Miami, if it's not too far of an ask in the other direction that LeBron doesn't want to go in, he has always begrudgingly done the best thing for the team, right? That Miami team with sure. with Bosch at the five was exponentially better than some stiff white guy like Zydrunas Ilgauskas at the five and Bosch at the four and then LeBron at the three. Like, it was so much better that even LeBron, like Spoelstra, just basically showed LeBron the difference here in the success level, and LeBron went along with it as a team. And I think here with the Lakers, both those guys, you know, maybe AD doesn't start at the five, right? Maybe that's the compromise here, is that AD doesn't start at the five, where he is identified as a center for the entirety of the season, and then moves over to the five in the most important stretches of games. I think that's how this dynamic turns out.
To the listener's question on that, and proposed lineup, I think it's a solid lineup. The one place where I have a degree of concern is I think that AD fits better with Boogie than he does with JaVale, because Boogie has that ability to go out onto the perimeter. Mm-hmm. So for spacing purposes, it gives better, you know, driving lanes for LeBron, better, more room for Anthony Davis to operate with. Boogie can go inside too. Obviously, that's a strength of his game, but he can also be a guy that sets up in one of those five out type of spots, where JaVale is really the only time he's up on the perimeter is to set a ball screen, and then he's rolling back down. He's either going to be in the dunker spotter somewhere around the basket. So I, you know, in New Orleans, when Davis and Boogie were on the court together without Rondo, they had a plus 10.4 net rating. When you include Rondo in that, that dropped down to minus 1.3.
Yeah.
So I actually, the way that the ball handling and passing ability of those two work together, if we're going to start somebody else at five aside from Anthony Davis, my preference would be Boogie. Although I do see where that listener's coming from in terms of putting JaVale there. I just don't think it's as good of a fit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think eventually that'll be the better starting lineup with Boogie in there. I just, like we talked about last show when you and I got together, I just think to start the season, it might make more sense to have JaVale there and let Boogie work himself into that spot. Though Boogie did go out there and say that his quad is fully healthy.
He looked great, man. He looked great in that interview with
Super Geeter. Duper thin.
Yeah, that was wild. I'm really excited. Bro, if Boogie can get to like 75% of what he once was, that raises the ceiling of this team exponentially.
Absolutely.
Like, because that dude can play. You do not sign guys like that for a 1 year, $3.5 million deal very often. He's got so much talent. And if he can get just somewhere close to that, we're just a different team.
Yep. All right. Next question here comes from LA240825. Hi, Anthony. Love the show, and as always, keep up the awesome work. Thank you. I am curious as to if there's a limit to what type of player can play in the Summer League. Is there an age limit or anything like that? And also, has LeBron chosen his new number yet? I think six is the number, right? I think he's gone back to six.
Yeah, I believe that's the case.
You think he tweeted out like six and then the hand praying thing?
He tweeted out Grant's Photoshop in the number six, so I think that probably speaks to it.
That's pretty badass. Shouts to Grant.
He's really, the best.
Really, 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 really good at this. All right, so let's talk about this is a quick question, but Summer League age limits, I think it has to do more with the amount of time you've spent in the NBA, but even there, like, we've seen veterans go in there and play too.
There are no restrictions on who can play in the Summer League. I mean, LeBron could play in the Summer League if he wanted to. The conventional way of doing it is it's for first and second year players if they're in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And then anybody who's playing in Europe or a G League guy, those guys, you know, are in their mid to late 20s and they'll be on Summer League rosters. But it's more, you know, kind of what's conventional. Do guys decide they want to? So, you know, Cameron Payne is in his like fourth straight year playing in Summer League. So there's no restriction on it. It's just in terms of what usually happens. It's first and second year NBA players, and then kind of journeymen who were on that fringe of being in the NBA or not.
I really missed seeing Dragan Bender out there this year. That was a bummer. All right. Next question. We got two more to go. Jay Rover 76 writes, how do you expect the lineups with Jared Dudley to look like, and how do you expect those shifts to be? Lineups with him plus LeBron and AD, how would they play him without either LeBron and AD on the floor? How often do you expect the Lakers to rest both LeBron and AD? There's another similar question on those same lines, but that's for a later mailbag. But regarding whether or not LeBron and AD will ever not be on the court at the same time. But Dudley has been a tougher fit in the rotation for me than I thought he would be. How have you, you know, from what you've looked at in the rotation and stuff like that, how have you piece that together?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I think he's probably a 12 to 15 minute guy, play two shifts, probably that late first quarter to beginning of second quarter run. Same thing in the third and fourth quarters. But with the three bigs of AD, Boogie and JaVale that are probably, there's 96 minutes between the four and five positions, and those three probably eat up, you know, a good 80 to 85 of them. Dudley is probably a one position guy at this point. He's not a three anymore. There was a time earlier in his career where I think he could and he did play the three spot. He's not really a five, and especially on this team with the construction of it. But Dudley's still, he's one of the few like old dudes that's still a really good defender. He's always going to be in the right spot. He knows what his role is. He knows why he's out there. He knocks down open shots at a solid rate. He's a good player, but I think he's probably a 12 to 15 minute guy at this point.
Yeah, I agree. The other thing with Dudley too is that he doesn't have the resume that you say like, oh, he has to have X and Y role on this team. Right.
And part of what's good about a guy like him is he's going to accept his role. You know what I mean? Like if he's a 12 to 15 minute guy, he's going to be the best 12 to 15 minute guy he can be. And he's really, really engaged in the game and really knows the game on a mental level. So it's like having another coach there as well.
Which is going to help given the lack of really good point guards on the roster.
Good point.
Like having a guy like that who thinks about the game in that respect is really important. The other thing, too, with keeping a guy like Dudley at 12 to 15 minutes is that he can go out there and play his ass off in those 12 to 15 minutes.
Yes.
Which is really going to help his value during those stretches. All right. Last question here. It's the same kind of question. We're probably going to get this until the Lakers actually fill this roster spot. But McNugget2483 writes, we have two spots left at 13. Not really. We have Talen Horton-Tucker on the roster. So they have 14 heading into training camp. Who would you prefer to take that last roster spot or spots if they do open it up? Iggy is the clubhouse leader, but he isn't even a free agent yet. I'm surprised how little we've heard about Kyle Korver. Now that he is officially able to be signed at this point, that's interesting to me. And then so they listed Jabari Parker. He's already been signed. He went to Atlanta, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then the emotional choice here that they list is Powell. Mm-hmm. So personally,
we need a wing. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah, we need a wing. We have all these needs, but if the Lakers were to sign Powell, I wouldn't go out there and raise hell about it. I love that dude so much.
Sure, I do too. I don't know. Like, I love Powell too. I've got Powell and Mark, when I was coaching high school ball, came and visited and practiced with my kids for an hour. And we had the boys team there and the girls team there. And Powell is the nicest celebrity I've ever met.
Yeah.
He looked everybody in the eye, every kid that was like super excited.
He doesn't even hold himself like a celebrity.
No, not at all. And that's part of why, right? So he came, I'll spare you the longer version of the story. Him and Mark, the Grizzlies had flown into town, and we had picked up Mark directly from the airport. So Mark was super cool about it too. I had one of my kids that had graduated tried to dunk on Powell on one end. We were doing just layup lines, right? And Powell and Mark were playing dummy defense on each end, lightly contesting. We had the boys team there, the girls team there. I invited a bunch of the kids that had already graduated. It was a really special night. And so everyone's doing layups and whatnot. And this one kid who was MVP of the league the year before, and he's named Isaiah. And Isaiah was like, I'm going to try to dunk on Powell. I'm like, no, you're not. He's like, Coach, when am I going to get another chance to do this? I was like, you know, that's a fair point. Touché. You know, so Powell's there for just like this, like doing this cool thing, right, for all these like 16 to 19 year old kids, because we had the alums there, and you know, just lightly contesting, just a, you know, relaxed environment. Isaiah comes freaking barreling down, and you see like the glint in Powell's eye, like oh shit, last moment, and he almost gets Powell. He like back rims the dunk, and like, Powell's cracking up. Isaiah tries the same thing on the other end. Mark had just won the defensive player of the year.
Oh, no.
We had a very small gym. It was only, you know, those pull-out type of bleachers with like four or five rows back. And he tried that same thing on Powell or on Mark. And Mark swatted that shit off the gym walls. Like, he was not having any of it. Anyway, walls plural. I love Powell.
I love that. Walls plural.
Yeah. I was like, turning off of water. Because he saw what he tried to pull on his brother on the other end. And Mark was like, absolutely not. I'm not having this 6'1", you know, kid just graduated high school bang out on me. So anyway, greatest guys, like they're the coolest guys. But we're trying to win a title this year, yeah, and we need to maximize every spot. I personally hold that spot open, wait for the buyout market.
Yeah, I do too. Though if I had, you know, I just don't think Troy Daniels is going to get very much of an opportunity here. So if it's like wave Troy Daniels and then have Powell come back and like retire as a Laker, I'd be fine with it. I just, and it's because I don't see Troy Daniels playing that important a role, right? He's kind of an excess guy there if, you know, break glass in case of emergency. And I just love Powell that much. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not even going to apologize for this. He's legitimately, for one thing, like, super smart dude. Like, ridiculously intelligent guy. And I think in that respect, you know, he could help in the same kind of way that Dudley might, you know, from the bench standpoint, more than, you know, Troy Daniels would in any really capacity on this team. So you have that argument to be made. And, yeah, I mean, you know, Domin and I'm sure Domin is listening right now. We just love this guy. So, yeah, bring back Powell. And give Powell... One, I know that they're going to retire his jersey. He just completely deserves to have his jersey retired. Yes. But I also want to see him have that, have a statue of him. Remember when he like let out that absolute guttural scream
after the and one?
After the and one, mm-hmm, that Skip Bayless's dumbass went out there and tried to say was traveling. But like he let out that like guttural scream. He's like flexing his arms and stuff like that, and it was so like. Such the antithesis to Powell because he was such this unassuming dude and whatever. But man, he was incredible. I missed
that. Was Black Swan. Remember Kobe would always talk about how is the white swan. He wants him to be the Black Swan. That was Black Swan right
there.
That
was so perfect. I love that dude. All right. That'll do it for this episode and this week's episodes of Locked On Lakers. A quick shout out to you guys. We have now had three, like back-to-back-to-back, the biggest 3 weeks in show running history. It has been astronomical, the growth and the success that the show has had. So thank you guys a ton for that. The support has been incredible. I hope to continue to relay this support. I know we're going to go into some thin months here, but we're once again going to get ready for the player preview portion of the summer. I know you guys really enjoyed that last summer. And then we're just going to have some fun projects. We'll probably, you know, on days where there's nothing really going on and we don't feel like doing a player preview, we'll do a look back and we'll look at some of those things and we'll remember some of our fondest memories as Laker fans and get ready for the season to be. But thank you again. We are now through the free agency and all the chaos that the last few weeks have been. We got through that semi-hole. I've lost maybe a good like 6 months of my life to it, but it was worth it. But have a great rest of your weekend, everybody. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.